S&P futures this Monday morning are trading at around 7,598, down about 22 points, or roughly 0.3%. That's a modest decline that reflects Gulf tension and the broader geopolitical uncertainty rather than any specific domestic economic shock. Let me frame the business stories through that lens.
Private equity is facing a structural reckoning right now. Q2 2026 was the worst quarter for U.S. private equity exits in 5 years. To explain what that means, private equity firms make money by buying companies, improving them, and then selling them, either through an IPO, a sale to another company, or a sale to another PE firm. When the exit environment is frozen, money is locked in. The firms that raised large funds a decade ago, on the assumption they'd exit holdings in 5 to 7 years, are now sitting on assets they can't sell at target valuations. Large firms are dominating fundraising because institutional investors, pension funds, endowments are concentrating their commitments with established names they trust. Smaller and mid-market PE firms are struggling to raise capital at all. Analysts are calling it a potential zombie wave, firms that are technically alive but can't execute their business model.
The auto industry tells a parallel story about tariff policy. Most major automakers are still resisting U.S. reshoring despite tariff pressure, with Toyota as a significant exception. Toyota has been expanding U.S. manufacturing capacity. They have plants in Texas, Kentucky, Alabama, Mississippi, and Indiana, and that's paying dividends in the current tariff environment. Honda, Nissan, and Toyota all posted steep China sales drops in the first half of 2026, which is a separate challenge. Chinese domestic EV brands have effectively eaten into Japanese automakers' market share in China with dramatically faster product cycles. The Japanese manufacturers are being squeezed from two directions simultaneously: tariff pressure in the U.S. market and competitive pressure in China.
Huawei's move to build a DRAM fabrication facility is an important piece of the semiconductor supply chain story. The plant is being constructed through Swasher, a Huawei-linked company, in Shenzhen, 140,000 wafers per month capacity, focused on 12-inch wafers. This matters because DRAM, dynamic random access memory, is experiencing what analysts describe as the worst shortage in years. Global DRAM prices are surging. SK Hynix had a record NASDAQ debut, but saw its Seoul shares dip afterward. The classic dynamic of a stock that's been bid up in anticipation of a listing and then experiences profit-taking. Micron is the other major player here, and Goldman's SpaceX A. I forecast pointing to Micron as the top beneficiary is essentially a bet that orbital and ground-based AI compute expansion will both require substantially more high-performance memory than current supply can deliver.
Apple's M7 Ultra chip, reportedly designed to support 1.5 terabytes of memory, according to Mark Gurman, is relevant to the same trend. Apple Silicon has been progressively increasing unified memory capacity precisely because the most demanding AI inference tasks require enormous amounts of fast, accessible memory. If the M7 Ultra can actually support 1.5 terabytes, that's a meaningful step toward using Apple hardware for serious AI workloads that currently require server farms.
The Eric Trump Ethereum situation warrants direct attention. He's been promoting Ethereum publicly while the Trump family holds a documented, significant cryptocurrency stake. The conflicts of interest here are layered. The family has financial interests in crypto asset values going up. The administration has regulatory power over crypto markets through the SEC and CFTC, and individual family members are publicly advocating for specific assets. There's no cleaner example of why ethics rules around financial promotion and family member activities need to be applied consistently.
Student debt is also back in the news in a way that doesn't get enough coverage. Nearly 10 million Americans aged 50 and older are carrying approximately $452 billion in education debt. That's nearly $500 billion held by people who are within 15 years of traditional retirement age. New federal repayment rules took effect July 1st, and many of these borrowers are seeing payment structures change. This isn't the 22-year-old fresh graduate demographic that dominates the student loan conversation. These are people for whom debt repayment competes directly with retirement savings, healthcare costs, and in some cases, supporting adult children. The economic pressure on this cohort is substantial and underappreciated.